The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
The Gubbins is known as the most dramatic coastal walk in Europe. It's been described as a journey through time and the elements, and it's a very popular spot for thousands of tourists in Northern Ireland every year. I took on the Gubbins yesterday and therefore decided to invite our guide yesterday, Philip Hoy, to tell us all about it. Philip, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thanks very much for having me.
No ill effects, I have to tell you, after our adventures on the Gubbins. But maybe you'll explain to me, what is or are the Gubbins?
So the Gubbins is a coastal cliff walk. It was originally created in 1902 and it brought lots of people to the area using the railways. It was all the brainchild of a man called Barclay Dean Wise. He was a railway engineer.
Now, you had the railway opened between Belfast and Larne.
Yeah.
And that kind of cuts off this peninsula. It almost triangulates it.
Yes.
So you're left with the hinterland and the sea and all of that. So this was purely a device for tourism.
Yeah, absolutely. They wanted people to use the railways, so they thought, well, we need to have something for people to go to when they get on the train, you know.
Yeah.
So, they decided they were going to dig a big walk into the side of a cliff.
Now, it turns out that this man, Wise, took his inspiration from a railway that had been opened somewhat earlier.
Yes, he had done his apprenticeship in the Braid of Greystones line down in County Wicklow, so he had sort of been eyeing up that and seeing what did we do there and how can we do it better up in the north.
Okay, so therefore he was familiar with what you had to do to rock, to create
a
passageway. Now, they didn't have, I presume, pneumatic drills and all that kind of stuff in 1902, so how did they do it?
They just used pickaxes and shovels and spades and just dug it out. You know, nowadays they had all the sort of equipment they have now and hard hats and health and safety. Back then they were just out in their hobnail boots and flat caps, you know. So
so they hacked a pathway around the headland.
Yeah, that's exactly it. They just dug everything out by hand, brought the bridges and everything in by train, floated them out in barges and then used pulleys to lift them up. So they'd done the whole path in 11 months. They started in 1901 and it opened in 1902.
Yeah. Now, the Gubbins has changed over the years because the elements have got to work on the Gubbins.
Yeah, exactly. So in 1954, they had a big landslip near the end of the path. And that was really the beginning of the end for the path.
1954.
Shortly after, yes.
So it had 52 years of tourism until
Exactly. So after that happened, then it lay just in sort of disrepair. There was people sort of snuck around and clambered over the sort of old rusty bridges and everything, but it wasn't the safest.
Yeah. So they decided to rebuild the Gubbins at much expense, I suspect.
Yeah, they reopened it in about 2015, so they did. So all new bridges and any bits that had been sort of unsafe, they've sort of avoided them and built new stainless steel bridges across them.
Now, it's not like walking down a pavement.
No.
It is somewhat challenging. I mean, it's not difficult in any way, but you wear proper boots, which you get at the visitor centre. You wear a hard hat in case you bang your head against the rock, particularly at the very beginning.
Yeah, there's a wee hole you go through at the start called Wise's Eye, just in memory of Barclay Dean, and there's at least one person on every tour hits their head on it on the way through.
Yeah, so you need the hard hat.
You
need the boots. I mean, you could try wearing trainers and so on, but you need stout boots, I think.
Oh, yeah, you need the boots to go on. Still the same steps that have been there for 120-odd years, so they're sort of all different heights and slanty and things like that there, so you need the good footwear, so you do. Yeah.
Now, there are some relics of the old bridges still to be seen along the Gubbins, but new bridges have been put in, which are, you know, very robust, and there are guardrails everywhere, so it's very unlikely you can have a mishap.
Oh, no, it's very safe. As long as everybody sort of follows the instructions and listens to the guide, there's no bother at all.
Now, it's 3 kilometres in length, and you go there, and then you turn back, and you come back the way you came. And each group is a max of 15 people?
About 15, usually. That's what can fit in the minibus.
So you might have to squeeze past each other as you're going hither and thither.
Yeah, we usually pass on the bridges. That keeps
plenty of room on the bridges.
Yeah.
And there are tunnels and caves.
Yeah, there's a tunnel we go through, which has got the very creative name of the tunnel. And you go through it, and there's wee LED lights turn on when you go into it. But back in the day, they used to hang lanterns up so people could get through.
Yeah, it appears that children used to run along the Gubbins back in the day?
Yeah, there's a bridge called the Tubular Bridge, and nowadays it's quite big and wide, but back in the day in the original bridge, it was narrower and two sort of flat railway lines across the top of it, and children used to race each other back and forward to see who could do it in the quickest amount of time.
Crazy stuff. There's a cave, it's a smuggler's cave. What would they have been hiding?
All sorts of things would have been things like tea, tobacco, whiskey, poaching. But the biggest one, believe it or not, was table salt, just ordinary salt that you put in your dinner. There were really high taxes on salt over in Britain, but there was no tax on salt at all in Ireland. So they would come over from Scotland with empty barrels and filled it maybe two-thirds of the way up with salt. And then they would top it off with sand. Then they'd go back over to Scotland. The customs man would say, "What have you got in the barrels?" They'd say, "Oh, well, we went over to Ireland to get a big load of fish, but it didn't get a great catch. So we brought these barrels of sand back with us to balance the weight of the boat out so it didn't tip over." But really, it was the salt was in it. You know,
salt
you were making a fortune
underneath.
Selling it on then over there.
Yeah, and it's funny, from one of the viewpoints, I could see Scotland yesterday.
Oh, you could. It's only about 20 or so kilometres over to Scotland there. So you could swim over.
Now, obviously, we're all speaking English in these parts at the moment. There isn't much of a Gaeltacht, I suspect, in Antrim.
No.
But a lot of the names are derived from the Irish language.
Yeah,
I mean, the Gubbins, where does that come from?
Yeah, so the Gubbins comes from the Irish na Gubbain, which literally means the small beaks, so the little snouts, but metaphorically it just sort of means the points or the headlands.
So as we go around the coast, there are various points, and they would be the beaks, if you like.
They would.
So shut your gob.
that's where that comes from.
Or there's another word as well involving gob. Pig Island, Muck Island.
Yes, so there's a harbour on the north coast of Ellenmagee called Port Muck, and there's a wee island off the coast of it called Muck Island or the Isle of Muck. And Port Muck comes from the Irish for the port of the pigs. And then, of course, then Muck Island is the island of the
and
pigs.
And what's the derivation of it? I mean, were there pigs kept on the island?
Yeah, that's one of the theories. One of the theories is that they kept pigs on it. Another one is that the Irish word for a porpoise is Muck na Mara, which means a sea pig. So there's a theory that
could
maybe it sort of looks like a porpoise out in the water there. But it's the end of a cattle trail. It was built by the O'Neills in the sort of 1500s, so they reckon that went from Ballymuir to Port Muck, and then they would have taken cattle on from there over to Scotland and things like that there.
Now, tell me about the witch trial, the last witch trial in Ireland. This was in, where was it, Ellenmagee?
Ellenmagee. A lot of the women that were involved in it were from Ellenmagee, and the sort of supposed hauntings happened on Ellenmagee, but the actual trial itself took place in Carrickfergus in 1711. So basically there was a girl, she was 18 years old, called Mary Dunbar, and she claimed that she had been sort of psychically attacked and was being sort of oppressed by sort of demonic presences and things like that there. And she accused 8 women and 1 man of sort of orchestrating this. So all of them were trialed and convicted of witchcraft, but the 8 women, they were put in jail for a year and a day, and they were to be put in the stocks 4 times.
Uh-huh.
But the man, William Sellers, because Mary Dunbar, she actually died after he had been convicted and he was still sort of out and about, he hadn't been put in jail yet. So because she died, they reckon that he was the only one that was actually eligible to be executed.
And they did?
Well, there's no record of it, but he was convicted as being guilty, so it's likely that William Sellers was executed.
My goodness. It's an area absolutely full of history.
Oh, it absolutely. Is, aye, surely.
And what a great walk we had yesterday. Philip, thank you very much for guiding us along the Govan.
No problem. It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.